today we're going to be starting a new series that we're calling Crafted by God. And I was thinking about this series, and want to know what's kind of funny? We're going to be looking at Genesis. We're going to start off in Genesis 1:1 this morning, and then we're going to end up in Colossians chapter 1, verse 16 and 17. If you want somewhere to turn to Colossians 1. That's going to be where the thrust of everything is. But as we're going to be looking at some Genesis and some New Testament passages over the next few weeks as we talk about what it means to be crafted by God. And when I was thinking about this sermon series, the one thing that I thought of when I thought about crafted by God, you know, this is going to sound funny. I thought of my grandmother. My grandmother was a wonderful Christian woman. Her name was Lois Bryant, and she was awesome. She was great. I loved this woman. She's amazing. Part of why I think of her when I think about this is I think about a Christmas ornament she made for me when I was like 3 or 4 years old. If I had been less lazy this week, I would have brought it. I would have gone up in the attic and gotten the Christmas decorations down and pulled out this little Christmas decoration. So let me see if I can describe this. You remember those little small lifesaver rolls that were like 3 or 4 lifesavers long? See, some of you already know where this is going because you have a Christmas decoration that looks just like it. And they would take yarn, and she drew like a, she made this little yarn thing and made a little person that the little lifesaver thing is its body and has a little head and has feet and arms. Some of you are going, yeah, I have one of those, right? You know, I have one of those that my grandmother made me when I was like 3 or 4, and it is like one of my favorite things. And you know what? I got to be really honest. No offense to my grandmother. That thing is ugly. Can I admit that? If I were to bring that here and show it to you, you'd be like, oh, how cute that he likes that. You know, that's our pastor's not quite right in the head. You know, he's not. But I think about this thing because I think about how awesome it is to me because it represents something. It represents my grandmother who spent time making it. Now, my grandmother, my grandfather actually made something else for me. My senior year of high school, they spent about 6 months. There were three of us that were graduating my senior year of high school. My brother, my twin brother, was also graduating. He squeaked through and barely graduated. And we had another cousin who was graduating high school at the same time. They got together, and my grandmother and my grandfather, they went and bought a whole bunch of oak, and they built roll-top desks for all three of us. It took them about 6 months, 9 months to build this, and they worked on it every single night. That thing is solid, and it weighs a ton. It's sitting in Britt's room, and she's like, yeah, it weighs a ton. I've tried to move it. So it's beautiful, isn't it? See, she says it's really pretty. Take Britt's word for it. If you're not taking mine, take Britt's word for it. But I mean, it's beautiful, and I look at that thing, and every time I see that, I think of my grandparents, and I think of the love that they had for me and I had for them. We kind of do that sometimes, don't we? You want to know one of the most profound verses in all the Bible is it's right here, Genesis 1:1, that says, and you don't even have to look it up. I bet you can quote it with me. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. See, you guys, nice job. Woo! You've memorized scripture, and I mean, we know that, don't we? But if we take time to really think about what that verse means, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The truth is that there's a lot of things that we can learn about God just from looking at creation. And when I look at where it all began in Genesis 1:1 that says, in the beginning, God created, and I have to stop right there. The very first thing you see God do is what? Create. He is crafting things. He is creating things from the start. The very first thing we see God do in Scripture is create. That is profound if you really think about it. The truth is that everything that God has created, the heavens, the earth, all of this stuff that God has created teaches us things about God. Teaches us stories about God. It teaches us things about God that we could learn about if we just kind of look a little bit here. Because creating is such an integral part of who God is. And the truth is, you know, you've heard me preach a lot of sermons in here about creation. You've heard me preach a lot of sermons about like the stars and the heavens. We, this year, had Vacation Bible School back in July, and we had sky and space stuff everywhere, right? Some of you were pretty sick of seeing sky and space stuff at that point, you know, and some of you were going, I mean, it's easy for us to do that. It's easy for us to preach magnificent sermons out of like my favorite verse, which I've already preached on before. We'll put it here on the screen, Psalm 19:1, that says this, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the expanse, the heavens proclaim the work of his hands. We hear that, and it's easy for us to grasp onto that, and it's easy for us to go, yeah, amen. Because the heavens talk about God's glory. The stars talk about a sustaining power. This week, how many of you were fascinated by the eclipse? Did any of you go and look at it? Okay, any of you blind today because you looked at it and you weren't supposed to? All right, just checking. Because we see this, the sun and the moon. Do you want to know one of the most amazing facts that you've heard me talk about here before? Our moon is 400, you know how our moon perfectly covers the sun for an eclipse? You want to know why that happens? The moon is 400 times smaller than the sun. But the sun is 400 times further from us than the moon is. So the result is we end up with these perfect eclipses, or as near perfect as you can get, and we're able to see things about God that we couldn't if it didn't happen that way. That's how we're able to learn that the sun has a corona. Through eclipses, we've been able to see the chemical composition of the sun that we wouldn't have been able to see without being able to use spectrographs and all this stuff on the corona. Now, is it just coincidence that the only spot in our entire solar system, and there are hundreds of moons throughout our solar system, there's only one spot it lines up so perfectly, right here where you and I are. Is that an accident? I don't think it is. The closest you can get, we have about 100% match here. Closest you can get is one of the moons of Saturn, and it's about a 90% match, a 91% match. Even that isn't enough to really see the corona. But it just so happens that the place where we live is where we're able to experience that, and I don't think that's accidental at all. But we look at these big things like the heavens declaring the glory of God. We marvel at an eclipse that shows God's work in the heavens, and we get awed by that. You want to know the interesting part about Genesis 1:1? It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Does anyone want to guess how many verses it is? Without looking it up, I just want you to guess. How many verses is it till mankind is even hinted at? Anybody want to guess? Or if you guys like me and go, I don't want to look stupid in church. 26 verses. It begins with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And mankind isn't even hinted at until verse 26. Because God creating is so much a part of who he is. Another one of those passages that I preached on last year was in Isaiah chapter 40. It talks about something fascinating here, verse 25 and 26. We'll put that here on the screen for you so you can see that along with me here. There we go. To whom will you compare me? To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Look up and see who created these. He brings out the stars by number. He calls all of them by name. Now, I want to stop here for a minute. I love this picture of God saying, who are you going to compare to me? Who's going to be my equal? I want you to go outside, and I want you to look at the stars. This is God saying, if you want to see something about me, go look at the heavens. Go look at the stars. And it says that God not only created all of those, he brings them out by number. He calls all of them by name. The 76 trillion stars in the universe, God knows every single one of them. And I like the last verse here in verse 26, the last sentence. Because of his great power and strength, not one of them is missing. Do you catch that picture here? And I'm not going to rehash over a sermon that I preached last year, but basically, God sustains the stars. It's not something that God created and set in motion, but something that God sustains. Because of his great power and strength, not one of them is missing. It means an ongoing thing. God is still involved here. God sustaining our universe is like a musical note. You could sing a note, and it only goes as long as you're singing, as long as your voice is holding up, as long as you go, la, you know, it's going, right? That's the picture. It's not like God created something and left alone, but God is sustaining this universe, you and I, just like we would sustain a musical note, like we would hold out the end of it as well and sing that. Are you with me on all that? And it's fascinating to think about here. And it's fascinating to look at all this. And it's fascinating to think about some of the things that we've seen this week. So how many of you were glued to the TV the last few days watching Hurricane Harvey? Yeah, I surely wasn't the only one. We get fascinated by that, don't we? We get fascinated by the power and majesty that we see in that. Psalm 107, verses 24 through 27 talks about that. It says this, they saw the Lord's works, his wonderful works in the deep. He spoke and raised a stormy wind that stirred up the waves of the sea. rising to the sky, sinking down to the depths, their courage melted away in anguish. They reeled and staggered like a drunkard, and all their skill was useless. Did you catch this picture here? A storm that rises up that is so scary that everyone's courage melts away in anguish. They reel and stagger like they're drunk, and all their skill is useless. It says, then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper, and the waves of the sea were hushed. We marvel at the God that can control the wind and the waves. We marvel at the God that is bigger than a hurricane, do we not? And the truth is, sometimes when we look at things like that, it's easy for us to kind of get lost in that. When we consider the power and the majesty and the greatness of God, it's easy for us to get lost. You know what Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4 says? This is something David said. He said, when I observe your heavens, when I look up at the stars, when I see this, when I see the work of your fingers, the moon, the stars, which you set in place, what is a human being that you remember him, a son of man that you look after him? Because the truth is, when you look at the power and the majesty of God, it makes us feel really insignificant, does it not? We go, why would a God who is way bigger than a hurricane, the God who set the moon and the stars and the sun, the God who sets galaxies in place, why would he care about what I'm doing tomorrow? Why would he care about me whatsoever? Because it's easy for us to get lost in that kind of a picture. Which leads us back to our passage we're going to be looking at today, Colossians 1, verses 16 and 17. This was our theme verse for Vacation Bible School, and I want to share this. It's talking about Jesus here, and it says, for everything was created by him, in heaven and on earth, the visible and the invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and by him all things hold together. Now, before we kind of get into that, I think that verse kind of captures this sense of why God remembers you and I. Why the God who created the stars, why the God who created the heavens cares about you. Why he cares about us. What is it about us that makes us so special? Why would he notice us? There was an article I read not too long ago, and it was called When I Consider the Heavens from Ginger Cole Baba, and this is what she said. She said, several years ago, I think she captures this way better than I could have said it, so I'm going to read her words, and there we go. She said, several years ago, I had a crisis of faith. It all began with the Science Channel TV program on supermassive black holes, of all things. Basically, the premise was that scientists have discovered giant black holes that are like the size of an entire solar system in the center of every galaxy, and each plays an important role in the creation and the sustainability in a particular galaxy. The scientists described the extreme order of these black holes and the whole universal space-time continuum and how it's forced them to rethink physics. And the narrator, summing up several scientists, said, if, as it now seems, every single galaxy has a black hole as its heart, that can't be a coincidence. Well, you got that right, I thought. It's called, we've got a supermassive, super genius creator at work in the universe. Then the screen exploded with all these multicolored, multi-shaped, multi-gaseous galaxies, and my brain, for an instant, exploded at how awesomely vast and mammoth our God is. My finite brain couldn't handle the size and the power and the strength of my creator. And in that instant, I felt thrust into my own black hole that was very dark and desperate. Wait, how can this God possibly know anything about me? I thought, dumbfounded. There's no personal relationship with him. Come on, he's busy creating galaxies. How presumptuous of us humans to believe that God sent his son to die for us. We're much too insignificant in the whole of the universe. I thought that Thomas Jefferson must have been correct in his religious convictions. He believed that God was like a watchmaker. He wound up the universe, or in our case, the earth and life on it, and then let it run its course without his interference while he was off creating other worlds. I never stopped believing in God. I just began to think that God was so giant that he could never be personally involved in my insignificant, irrelevant life. I began to walk around in a daze, spending my days at work, writing about God, but not sure who he was, who I was claiming him to be. It became so overwhelming that finally I began, daily and purposefully, to sit quietly with God, just focusing on him. Every day I sat with my hands open, looking up to the heavens and asking God to show up if he was, in fact, who I'd always believed him to be. And the longer I sat, clearing my mind of all the doubts and arguments, the more I realized he was showing up. Over the course of several months, I continued awakening to God's presence, and he began to press upon my mind irrefutable truths. He reminded me that although he created supermassive black holes, he also created amoeba. He created microbiology with all of its clear and direct order. Through contemplation, God made me realize that if he cared to create such order with the most microscopic things, then wasn't it possible that he does have a personal interest in me? That maybe Jesus' words are true in Luke 12 when he says, "Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? Yet not one of them is forgotten by God. Indeed, the very hairs on your head are all numbered. Don't be afraid, you are worth more than many sparrows." Those times of contemplation moved me through my faith crisis. They center me back to remembering how awesome our Creator is. And when I begin to worry about life circumstances, the economy, job security, finances, family, health, I think about supermassive black holes and I return to how great is our God. He's not my buddy who may or may not be able to handle the problems of my life or the country or the world. He is the Creator God who made everything from nothing, who raises people from the dead, who opens wombs, who gives sight to the blind, who pushed up the mountains and shoved down the depths of the seas, who organizes and orders the massive, incomprehensible universe from the microscopic to the outer edges of all existence. And he gave his only son for me because he loves me. I love her words there. And I think some ways that's what this verse is talking about. Because look at this. For everything was created by him, and I want you to catch the progression here. What's the first thing that he talks about was created by him, by Jesus? What's the first thing mentioned? The heavens, right? You know, the big massive thing. And then it narrows it down a little bit. To what? The earth, right? Then it goes to what? The visible, then the invisible, right? So here's what I want us to do for a minute. I want to talk about this for a minute. I want to talk about what this means for everything was created by him in heaven and on earth, the visible and the invisible. And I want us to spend a little bit of time looking at this here this morning. And I want to start with the heavens and the earth here. Because relative to space, the earth is actually pretty small. You guys know that the sun has these big, giant solar flares that kind of go off. They're known as coronal mass ejections. Do you realize how massive those things are and compared to earth? Because in reality, I want to start here with Earth. Earth is pretty small in the grand scheme of things. Here's how small we are compared to one of these solar flares on the sun. You see that? This is a real scale picture here. I mean, it's not like Earth wasn't actually there. You know, we're not that close to the sun. But, you know, this is a picture to scale here. This is a solar flare that's shooting out of the sun, and you can kind of see Earth up there. You see that? Do you kind of catch that here for a minute? Do you kind of see just how small the earth is in comparison to even our own sun? Which our sun, incidentally, is way smaller than some of the other stars, as we've already looked at in a previous sermon here as well. Relative to earth, though, everything that we see is that we think of as huge is actually pretty small. I remember seeing famous mountains like Mount Hood over in Washington. I saw one time Mount Kilimanjaro over in Africa, the biggest mountain in Africa. It's like 19,000 feet or something like that, 21, I don't remember. I don't remember how tall it is. But I remember just being wowed by how awesome it looked, even from hundreds of miles away. Those big, giant things that we think of are huge are actually fairly pretty small when you compare them to the Earth. Because of their size, we tend to picture Earth as kind of being not real smooth if it comes down to it. The deepest ocean trenches, the tallest mountains, Mount Everest is like 35,000 feet. I mean, it's so tall, it's huge. But compared to the size of the earth, say you could hold the earth in your hands, okay? If you're like me, you would expect you'd feel little spikes from where the mountains are. You'd feel trenches. You'd be able to feel where the Grand Canyon is, right? Because we see these things and they seem massive and they seem huge. But the truth is, and if you look at the earth, if you could hold it here in your hands, it would feel smoother than a pool ball. Because as massive as a 35,000-foot Mount Everest is, it pales in comparison to the size of the Earth. Our Earth is about as smooth as a pool ball would be if you could shrink the Earth down to that size. You with me on all that? And notice here the progression that we had here on the screen was from the heavens, the Earth, the big to the small, the things that we see and then the things that we don't see. Even with the Andes and the Himalayas, our planet is fairly small. I mean, it's fairly smooth. We would kind of think of it that way. I actually have something that isn't mine, and I borrowed it. This right here is something that is actually Rusty and Lori's, and I borrowed it from them. Isn't this impressive? Yeah, you guys see what that is? No, it's just dirt. It's not volcanic ash. It's not anything like that. This is just dirt. This is all it is a bag of dirt, right? But it's special dirt to us. This is dirt that actually came from the little village that we ministered to in Honduras. This is Honduran dirt right here. You'll notice that there's a little, this is from Las Risas, right? Or was this Gracias? Do you remember, Lori? You don't know? Think Las Risas? We think that's where Rusty got it from. He stole dirt from Honduras. Don't turn him into the authorities because, you know, you're not really supposed to do that. So, but this right here is dirt from the little village that we minister to in Honduras. You know, you'll notice that there's a little Honduras table set up out there in the foyer because it's time for us to start talking about our trip coming up in March. And I love that little village in Honduras, and I can't wait for us to be able to go back and minister to it. But Honduran soil is this soil right here there in Las Risas is not the most fertile soil, which is kind of ironic because they are up in this mountainous region but they haven't done a good job taking care of it. And one of the things that the mission organization we work with called 61 Isaiah, they're actually trying to teach people how to make their soil fertile again. They're doing experiments with chickens and having them, you know, they have them in pens that they built every single week, and the chickens, they just scratch around. They till up the soil. Their droppings go in there and helps fertilize the soil, and then they move them every week. So that they're doing little experiments like this to try and make their soil more fertile. That's some of the stuff that the missions organization we work with does, which is pretty amazing. We hope that some of you are praying right now about going and taking part in getting to see this in person next March when we go back, because it's going to be awesome. But this soil wasn't all that much fertile. Now, Galen and Charlotte, they've been up in Ruidoso. I have a picture of Ruidoso so you can see what that looks like. See, this looks a little bit different. Doesn't that look pretty? Yeah, that looks pretty, doesn't it? That looks a lot prettier than Brownwood. Would you guys agree? No. Some of you are offended by that, and that's okay because, you know, you're not quite right all in the head. Yeah. This soil right here is a whole lot more fertile than what I just showed you, the Honduran soil, right? A whole lot more fertile. There was actually a book written a few years ago, well, actually about 40 years ago, called The Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, and it's written by a guy named Annie Dillard. It won a Pulitzer Prize, and she talks about how much life is in just the square foot of soil as you're kind of walking. If you get a fertile soil, kind of like a forest soil, kind of like what you're seeing right there, would you believe that there are billions of creatures that are so tiny that the vast majority of them can't be seen with the naked eye? In the top 1 inch of soil, there are about 340 different animals that are under the area that would be covered by my footprint. When I step down in that top 1 inch of soil, there's about 340 different animals in that little same thing. Microscopic animals. You're talking things that we can't even see with our own eyes. 340 of them in one footprint's worth, which means if you go for about a 1 mile walk, you're treading on about 600,000 creatures, none of which you ever can see with your own eyes. Now, just like the stars and the sun tell us things about God, this does too. I want to point you back to Colossians 1, 16 and 17, because notice here, it talks about the heavens and the earth. And it talks about the things that we can see and the things that we can't see. This is significant. When God creates the heavens and the earth, he not only created the moon and the stars and the sky, he created amoebas and bacteria and things that are so small we can't even see them with our own eyes. Are you with me on all this? Stick with me here for a minute as we talk about this. Because he created the visible and the invisible. And just those little creatures that you walk on, they're just kind of the tip of the iceberg. You want to talk about cells for a minute? Some of you are going, yes. Some of you are going, no, I don't want to talk about cells. I don't want a science. But we're going to do a little bit of science here for a minute because your entire body is made up of cells. Your eyeball alone, do you want to guess how many cells are in your eyeball? It's about 100 million, almost 100 million cells just in your eyeball. There's about 4.5 million cone cells and about 90 million rod cells just in your eyeball. bacteria cells. Bacteria cells are so tiny that they're covering you at all times without you even realizing it. In 1 gram of soil, 1 gram of soil, of fertile soil, there are about 40 million bacteria in that 1 gram of soil. That's a whole lot of life in 1 gram of soil. When you wash your hands, you know why you wash your hands? You're trying to get rid of all that bad bacteria and all that kind of stuff that's on your hands. When you wash your hands, you're washing away about 5 million bacteria cells off of your hands. That is an awful lot of life, is it not? And it goes even further from that, too. And here's what I want you to catch here for a minute. That everything was created by him, the visible and the invisible. And cells themselves are made of smaller things. If you want to take one of the smallest cells that are out there, it's an intestinal bacterium, and it's pretty small for a cell. You ready for the size of it? 0.0001 centimeters wide. So it is so tiny, it's itty-bitty. But inside that one cell, there are 20,000 ribosomes in it, and the ribosomes are basically this chemical factory that are producing protein molecules for the cell to be able to use. And these molecules, the 20,000 of them that are inside a cell that is 0.0001 centimeters wide, there's 20,000 ribosomes inside that. Does that sound pretty small? Yeah, it kind of does here. It kind of sounds small. The truth is the molecules are composed of something else called atoms, right? The atoms themselves are more imaginably small. Even atoms are composed of other things. Some of you are remembering from science here. You remember what we know of that are in atoms? Protons, electrons, neutrons. And the truth is that once we get beyond that, the whole thing kind of gets kind of crazier, and we're still trying to figure out what goes on with some of that kind of stuff. But here's the thing that I want you to do. The God who created the sun, the moon, the stars, the God that created the eclipse that we were so wowed at this week, created cells and atoms and molecules and things that are so small we can't even see it. They think that protons, electrons, and neutrons are even composed of smaller things called like leptons and quarks, and all these things are just kind of not experimental. They're just hypothesis right now because we don't have anything small enough to be able to view them, but we see evidence that there are smaller things than even those. Are you kind of getting the picture here from it? All things have been created by him. Everything was created by him, the visible and the invisible. And look at the last sentence. He, talking about Jesus, is before all things, and by him all things hold together. You know why we have cells and protons and neutrons and electrons and atoms and all of this sort of stuff? Because God made it that way. And he holds it all together. All things are held together because of him. Truth is that creation points us to Jesus. That's, if we go back here a little bit in Colossians 1, I want to read verse 15 through 17. I want to go back to verse 15. It says, Jesus, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For everything was created by him in heaven and earth, the visible, the invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and by him all things hold together. If we want to talk about what it means to be crafted by God, we have to begin by learning about the Creator. And when we start off learning about the Creator, we see that not only did God make those huge, unimaginable things, but he makes the small, little, detailed things too. Every time I see things about like black holes or stars and all that, it makes me feel small and insignificant. Do you know what I remember? That same God made 20,000 ribosomes to fit in a space of 0.001 centimeters wide in this little bacterium cell. And if God has that kind of attention to detail, you are not an accident. You are not forgotten. You are not someone that God did not make intentionally, on purpose. He made you, and he delights in you. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty awesome to me. I think the creation points to Jesus, and you see in Psalm 19:1 that the heavens declare his glory. The earth shows his wisdom. The cell shows his providence. Stephen Meyer, a scientist, actually wrote a book called Signature in the Cell, and he talks about how the cell and the information in it, your DNA, is God's signature on your life. Is God saying that you belong to me? The atoms and quarks, I think, the leptons and all of these things, I think they show God's inconceivable attention to detail. It shows the God who, while he creates the big, giant, powerful things, his power, his plan is seen in the smallest, tiniest thing, and we matter to him. In Proverbs 8, there's a very interesting little passage here. And in Proverbs 8, wisdom is actually kind of personified. And Solomon, who's writing this, he's kind of writing from wisdom's point of view. And he's writing this little poem. All of Proverbs is a poetical thing. But he's writing from wisdom's point of view. And here's what he says in Proverbs 8, starting in verse 27. He says wisdom here. He says, wisdom, I was there when he established the heavens, when he laid out the horizon on the surface of the ocean, when he placed the skies above, and when the fountains of the ocean gushed out. Now look at this after we've had a hurricane. Wisdom says, I was there when he set a limit for the sea so that the waters would not violate his commands, when he laid out the foundations of the earth. In verse 30, wisdom says, I was a skilled craftsman beside him. I was his delight every day, always rejoicing before him. And I love this picture here. I was rejoicing in his inhabited world, delighting in the children of Adam. And I love this picture of Solomon writing from wisdom's point of view. He says, hey, I was there when God created the heavens. I was there when God created the stars. I got to see all that. It was amazing. It was awesome. And he ends that whole thing with verse 31. I was rejoicing in the inhabited world, delighting in the children of Adam, in humanity. The thing that wisdom says was the thing that was delightful, the thing that was joyful, the thing that was worth seeing wasn't the stars, wasn't the earth, wasn't any of that. It was the creation of you and me when God crafted us. And we're going to talk more about that in the next couple of weeks as we kind of continue this series on. But suffice to say, I want you to realize that creation speaks about God. And we tend to look for God's power and authority in the big things, that sometimes we lose sight of the small things as well. And God, there's a lot we can learn about God from studying those as well. Let's have a word of prayer. God, we thank you that you have created all things, that you have had such an unbelievable, detailed work. It is just inconceivable for us to be able to grasp how detailed our world is, how small things are, and how you crafted all of them. We thank you for what you have done when you created us. We thank you for sending your son to die for us. We're so unworthy of that, but we're so grateful for it. Thank you. We love you very much. For your name we pray. Amen.